Presente es de lucha.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. Greetings, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends. I am Siegfried, and this is our second show of 2017. Last week, in my first show since getting back from a teaching contract in China, first show in 10 months, I covered a lot of ground indeed, talking about Canada, Syria, Venezuela, and so forth. But this week, I want to come back to Venezuela and really focus on that country because something really momentous is happening there, or about to happen there. Tomorrow, Sunday, July 30th, Venezuelans will be going to the polls to elect delegates for a constituent assembly, National Constituent Assembly, to rewrite the country's constitution. And if you've been listening to the mainstream media at all, you'll have heard nothing but vitriol and venom being directed at this upcoming election in Venezuela, with Donald Trump threatening sanctions on the country if it goes ahead, and Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland, you know, the foreign minister who has a Nazi collaborating grandfather and who is proud of that fact, apparently, condemned the the Constituent Assembly in Venezuela, which is a sovereign country, of course, by the way, condemned it as an assault on democracy and demanded its cancellation. You know, demanded the canceling of this election. So the imperialist governments in North America are really lining up against this. There has even been calls for military intervention and regime change. You know, of course, on the guise of humanitarian grounds, of course. So what are they afraid of? What are they so worried about, these guardians of the capitalist system? Because they're obviously afraid of this election. They're afraid of what the Venezuelan people might do in this election and what it might lead to. We have to ask why. And that's what we're going to do tonight on Back in the USSR. So please stay tuned.
Pongo por delante de nosotros al comandante de todos los comandantes, al Cristo Redentor, crucificado y resucitado, al Cristo y su mensaje liberador, al Cristo y su mensaje de amor, de la justicia social, y los llamo a todos. Los que quieran patria, vengan conmigo para que sigamos haciendo patria.
Socialismo, inclusión, solidaridad y vocación, sacrificio, integración, reimpulsando la nación, justicia y revolución, son una misma cuestión. Como el pueblo y el amor, invencible voz de Dios, un compromiso, un corazón.
Socialista Unido de Venezuela, un partido para elevar a su más alta dimensión la patria de Bolívar.
PSV, la fuerza de los pueblos. PSV, la fuerza de los pobres. PSV, de hombres y mujeres. PSV, de los trabajadores. PSV, América Latina. PSV, alerta que camina.
Campesinos, transportistas, militares y milicias, policías y bomberos, comerciantes, misioneros, petroleros, petroquímicos, científicos y obreros, enfermeras y doctores, creadores, pescadores,
profesores, estudiantes, barrenderos, navegantes, peluqueros, carpinteros, afroindios, vigilantes, sacerdotes, periodistas, zapateros, los apuntes, batallones, brigadistas, vengan cooperativistas.
PSV, la fuerza de los pueblos. PSV, la fuerza de los pobres. PSV, de hombres y mujeres. PSV, de los trabajadores.
Vamos a vencer, militantes del PSV con Chávez. Vamos a vencer, militantes del PSV con Chávez.
¡Vengan conmigo!
Vamos a vencer, militantes. fuerte, ¡venceremos!
Okay, you listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That, of course, was the anthem of the Partido Socialista Unido de Venezuela, which, of course, was Hugo Chavez's party. He, of course, was elected in 1998 now. And that song really contains much of what you need to know about the current situation in Venezuela, actually. Because since the election of Hugo Chavez as president of the country in 1998, Venezuela has cast aside neoliberal capitalism and embraced what has been dubbed the Bolivarian Revolution, named for the 19th century revolutionary leader Simon Bolivar, who liberated Venezuela and five other South American countries from Spanish colonial rule. Since then, millions of units of public housing have been built, 359,000 in 2016 alone, and 1.5 million since the current president Nicolas Maduro assumed office. Millions of people have gained access to quality health care for the first time with the active assistance of Cuba. Millions of working-class Venezuelans have gone to higher education. People who would never have been able to afford it in previous decades. Public infrastructure has improved. Extreme poverty has been all but eliminated. Malnutrition and hunger have been successfully fought through government programs. And revenues from the country's oil industry have been devoted to the well-being of the people rather than the profits of multinational corporate cartels. Ordinary working people are gaining power over the places where they work. The rising commune movement in that country, which really is one of the most radical forces at work in that in Venezuela right now, really granting ordinary people, working class people, control over factories, farmland, and other enterprises, as well as meaningful control over their own lives for the first time, really. But naturally, not everyone is happy with this arrangement. As of course many people will know, Venezuela is in a period of crisis right now, and really that is the main thrust of really what I'm going to talk about tonight is indeed that crisis. Because really the constituent assembly happening tomorrow is in response to that crisis. So first what I want to do is I want to read this article here. This article is from Telesur, and it actually is an article from based on a speech that was given in the UK earlier this year. This was published on 20th of March, 2017. And the title is Marxist Ideas Deeply Rooted in Venezuela Revolution. And this was a speech the ambassador to the UK gave. And so I'm going to read this here. The Venezuelan envoy to the UK commemorated the legacy of Karl Marx by stressing her government's commitment to its ideas. The radical ideas of Karl Marx are deeply rooted in Latin American revolutionary ideas, and especially in Venezuela's Bolivarian Revolution and the policies of the governments of the late President Hugo Chavez and his successor Nicolas Maduro, Venezuelan ambassador to the UK, Rocio Maniero, said in a speech Sunday commemorating the legacy of the communist founder. Quote, "Communism has been present in the revolutionary ideas of Latin America throughout the 20th century, when communist parties emerged all over the region and were forced to go underground by the repressive governments of the time," Maniero told the crowd at the Marx Memorial Library in London. "In Venezuela especially, Marxist ideas were rooted deep in the soil of our revolutionary tradition, which goes back to the struggles against slavery and oppression and the war for independence which in Venezuela became a civil war." Maniero went on to explain how the socialist government in Venezuela has, over the past 16 years, instituted social programs that were inspired by Marxist ideas. Quote, "giving priority to the inclusion of poor people in health, education, and housing systems," end quote. The government in Caracas has also been involved in promoting those ideas in other parts of the continent and supporting political parties and movements that share Marxist ideas. Quote, "in the last decade, we have played a key role, and we have also been deeply involved in the formation of the Community of Latin American Caribbean States, CELAC, the Union of South American Nations, UNASUR, and the Bolivarian Alliance for the Peoples of America, ALBA," the Venezuelan envoy said. She went on to say that the efforts by the late leader Chavez and his government are at risk because capitalism is trying to crack down on the socialist surge in Latin America. Maniero recalled that in a speech in 2006, the late president warned us that there was not much time left to implement the socialism envisaged by Karl Marx. Quote, "socialism or death, but real death of the entire human species and of life on planet Earth, because capitalism is destroying the planet. Capitalism is destroying life on Earth. Capitalism is destroying the ecological equilibrium of the planet. The destructive development of the capitalist model is putting an end to life on Earth. I believe it's now or never, Chavez said, using the words of Marx himself. The government of Maduro, she added, is now facing ruthless attacks by the right-wing opposition in control of the National Assembly, while struggling with successive hostile administrations in Washington that see Venezuela as a, quote, unusual and extraordinary threat to the U.S. national security and foreign policy, the ambassador added. Meanwhile, the economic war organized by the right-wing opposition has dramatically intensified, affecting the distribution of food and medicines, while the international media has begun to promote the possibility of a humanitarian intervention in Venezuela, she warned. However, the Bolivarian revolution in Venezuela is far from giving up and will not bow to this multi-pronged aggression, Monero said, as her government continues to be inspired by the call made by Karl Marx in the 19th century, the workers of the world have nothing to lose but their chains. Workers of the world unite. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Quilapayún in a performance they did in 1973 in Salvador Allende's, the last days of Salvador Allende's government in Chile before the U.S.-backed coup overthrew him and destroyed that progressive government. But of course, Quilapayún singing that really legendary song, "The People United Will Never Be Defeated." And really, that really does justice to the Venezuelan people who are building socialism right now in their country. Now, the historian Arno Mayer said that the first way to measure how revolutionary a revolution is to look at the domestic backlash it provokes. We need to keep in mind, we need to keep that in mind. That the way to measure how revolutionary a revolution is to look at the domestic backlash it provokes. We need to keep that in mind when we look at the unrest going on in Venezuela today, the right-wing unrest, the reactionary unrest, reactionary terrorism, really, and which has taken more than 100 lives over the past 3 months. Since April, the Venezuelan right-wing opposition, back to the tune of $49 million from the U.S. government since 2009, straight out of the congressional budget for the State Department, has been fighting the government in the streets, engaging in brutal acts of violence and refusing repeated calls for dialogue by the current president, Nicolas Maduro, and attempts to forge some sort of negotiated settlement of the present crisis. By the way, it's interesting to note the targets of this opposition violence, things like public hospitals, public supermarkets, government-run clinics and healthcare centers, public radio and media centers, public transit, including subways, bakeries producing subsidized bread for the poor, and so on. These are the kind of things which are being targeted in the violence that the Venezuelan opposition is engaged in right now. Like, this is the kind of stuff that gets torched or vandalized or whatever. Like, to say nothing of the government supporters who have been shot, Afro-Venezuelans who have been lynched, suspected Maduro supporters doused in gasoline and set on fire, student leaders assassinated, and so on. All this violence being perpetrated by the U.S.-backed opposition in Venezuela. This is what's going on. I mean, I'll give you just a very brief synopsis of that. You know, this was actually a article came out on June 27th in VenezuelaAnalysis.com called "Venezuela Soldier Killed, Three More Burned Alive." And basically it goes like this. One National Guardsman has been killed and three people set on fire across Venezuela as violent anti-government protests continue for the 13th week. In Aragua, National Guard Sergeant Ronnie Alberto Para Araujo, 27 years old, died Tuesday of wounds sustained during what the public prosecution has described as an irregular situation the day before. Journalist Ramon Camacho has reported that Pera was shot while attempting to prevent a looting at the Walio supermarket in Maracay on Monday evening. The Aragua capital was the scene of widespread unrest following the opposition's call to block roads nationwide earlier that day. 68 businesses were looted, and several public institutions were attacked, including a fire station, a national telephone company switchboard, and a national tax administration office. The public prosecutor, was dispatched a state district attorney to investigate the sergeant's death. The public prosecution has also opened an inquiry into the non-fatal shooting of three other National Guard soldiers in another incident in Miranda State on Monday. In Lara State, two residents of a government-built Great Venezuelan housing mission apartment complex were attacked and burned alive by opposition militants late Friday evening. According to testimony by the local communal council, Henry Escalona, 21, Vladimir Pina, 27, were returning from a nearby party at 11:45 p.m. when they were accosted by a group of eight masked men who demanded to know if they were Chavistas. When the youth replied that they were government supporters, the assailants pulled out firearms and ordered them to kneel. As one of the young men attempted to escape, the masked militants doused them both in gasoline and set the men ablaze. Simply for living in Residencia Laranisas, an apartment complex built under the revolution, these youths were burned, affirmed community council spokesman Luis Rodriguez. Escalona and Pina are currently in critical condition, undergoing treatment for third-degree burns in the local Maria Pineda Central Hospital. The community is requesting that both men be transferred to a burn unit operating by the oil industry in the western city of Maracaibo. Meanwhile, in the upscale eastern Caracas neighborhood of Las Castanella, another man was stabbed and set on fire by masked individuals who reportedly accused her of being a Chavista. Quote, a young man identified as Giovanni Gonzalez, 24, was burned and stabbed by masked men on La Castellana who mistook him for a Chavista, declared Interior Minister Nestor Riverol via Twitter on Monday. The minister indicated that Gonzalez had been transported to a national, to a healthcare center and is in stable state, but offered no further details. During a public event on Tuesday, Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro condemned the aggressions, calling for unity of the people in the face of fascist violence. The attacks are the latest in a series of opposition lynchings of persons accused of being Chavista infiltrators or thieves. On June 3rd, 21-year-old Orlando Figuera died in the hospital after being stabbed and burned alive by a mob of anti-government protesters in Altamira. The public prosecution has yet to issue a statement on the latest lynchings. In another incident in eastern Caracas, a woman was accosted in a shopping mall by scores of opposition supporters Saturday who mistook her for the wife of a state television show host. In a widely circulated video, the woman was seen being verbally and physically assaulted by more than 100 protesters screaming murder. National Ombudsman Tarek William Saab denounced the incident as a hate crime, which he warned could, if left unchecked, be the prologue to a civil war. To pursue and attack a human being with intention to hurt or kill them for their ideological position is repugnant, he tweeted on Sunday. Likewise, in another mall in Chacao, representatives of a communal council were harassed Saturday when they arrived to make a bank deposit for the sale of government-sponsored local production and supply committee food bags. The grassroots leaders from the nearby town of Galapan had to be escorted by National Guard personnel to safeguard their security. So this is the kind of violence, fascist violence, that the Venezuelan opposition is perpetrating there. And that's very, very important to understand. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. We'll be right back.
capturing my memories. The frontier of lies. They try to escape across the street where Jesus stripped bare and raped the spirit he was supposed to nurture. In the name of my, in the name of my.
Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Rage Against the Machine with Born of a Broken Man. Now, talking, of course, about Venezuela and what's going on. And the Constituent Assembly, the National Constituent Assembly that is going to be voted in tomorrow to rewrite the Constitution has been called really in response to right-wing terrorism. You know, that's why this Constituent Assembly was really called in the first place, to basically there's a stand against right-wing terrorism and the U.S. imperialist forces that back it to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, as I described earlier. People have died for this vote to happen. Juan Bautista Lopez, leader of the Federation of University Centers and a member of United Socialist Party of Venezuela, was shot and killed on May 6th of this year by an assassin who fled on a motorcycle. And according to local paper El Vistazo, 23 bullets were fired at him. 23 bullets were fired into the body of this student leader. All of this happened one day after Lopez publicly voiced his support for Nicolas Maduro's proposal for a National Constituent Assembly to end the crisis in the country by bringing together delegates from working class communities, indigenous communities, Afro-Venezuelan communities, and other broad sections of the population. You know, so they could halt the violence tearing the country apart. And he was killed because he supported that process. As his death and the deaths of many others over the past 3 months shows, there are people in Venezuela who will kill to try to make sure that tomorrow's vote and a revision of the Constitution through a democratic process involving the masses of the people doesn't take place. And they're not afraid to fight dirty. I mean, some people might recall, I believe it was 2009 when, of course, the progressive government of Honduras was actually overthrown in a military coup d'etat backed by the U.S. because basically the President Manuel Zelaya was aiming for a revision of the Constitution under a similar process here to revise the, you know, through democratic input, revise the Constitution in a progressive direction. He was literally overthrown by the army for doing that. And of course, hundreds of people were killed. And there are, of course, reactionary forces, right-wing forces in Venezuela who are also willing to kill and engage in horrendous violence to try to stop this vote from taking place. And, of course, they got powerful backers overseas. They know that. So, of course, here's some more examples. On April 21st, 54 children, including 28 newborn babies, had to be evacuated from the Hugo Chavez Frias Maternal and Children's Hospital in the El Val neighborhood of Caracas after it was attacked for 3 hours 3 hours by stone-throwing opposition supporters who then set fire to a large amount of garbage outside the hospital, sending thick black smoke pouring into it. You know, thick black smoke, clouds of it just pouring into the hospital. 6 of the babies had to be stabilized before they were evacuated. And not an isolated incident. This is not an isolated incident. On May 18th, the Carrizal Maternity Hospital in Miranda State, the facility was besieged for 2 consecutive days by the opposition, and 3 newborn babies and a pregnant mother had to be evacuated after they were unable to receive treatment for more than 36 hours because the opposition activists were actively blocking doctors and nurses from getting to the hospital. Once again, smoke was entering the hospital from burning barricades positioned barely 50 meters away. This kind of violence would be universally condemned in the harshest terms if it happened almost anywhere else. But because this is Venezuela and it's effectively been deemed a rogue state by the US government, the mainstream media says nothing. Nothing about these crimes, you know, this fascist kind of violence. I mean, against, you know, young children in this case. You know, none of that. Instead, the Western press, it just calls the socialist government tyrannical and authoritarian. You know, constant attack on the legitimate institutions of the socialist government in Venezuela, on legitimate elections going on tomorrow, constant attack on those things, and just unending praise for the opposition, these fascist killers and whatnot, praising them as freedom fighters, basically. Meanwhile, just about every police officer or soldier who has killed or seriously injured someone in these past months of unrest has faced prosecution for it. Like, seriously. You know, this government is supposed to be authoritarian. Meanwhile, it prosecutes police officers and soldiers who seriously injure demonstrators. They prosecute them. And anyone who was at the Toronto G20 in 2010 knows how rare that kind of thing is. Where a government actually is willing to discipline police officers in that way. Yeah, the Venezuelan government has, and that's not exactly an authoritarian thing to do. I mean, this government has been anything but brutal or heavy-handed under the circumstances. I mean, under attack from violent opposition supporters, willing to use lethal force against people, innocent people, some inhabitants of working-class neighborhoods in Caracas have even called the government to introduce martial law, or at the very least a curfew, but they haven't. The government hasn't done anything like that. Instead, the Venezuelan government has called again and again for dialogue and for peace. The opposition, fully aware that it has the full backing of the American superpower, has done the opposite. It has refused every offer of dialogue. Everyone. I mean, after all, what incentive does it have to compromise? It has the backing of the United States. I mean, opposition figures are calling for some opposition figures are calling for the American military to intervene in their country and overthrow the government, engage in regime change. They don't compromise. The opposition refuses to compromise, refuses to even talk or negotiate. And so the violence continues. In June in Miranda State, a black man named Orlando Figuera was mobbed, beaten, stabbed, and set on fire by a crowd of opposition supporters. Set on fire. Burned alive. Several workers around the same time were gunned down by unknown assassins at a pro-government rally in Merida. Pedro Josu Carrillo, a Socialist Party activist, was found murdered 6 days after he'd been kidnapped. Luigi Paz was burned to death when an opposition demonstrator threw a Molotov cocktail at him while he lay injured on the ground after his motorcycle had been hit by a truck, which had swerved to avoid a barricade that the opposition had set up. And the truck driver also suffered third-degree burns to 95% of his body. And there's too many other cases of right-wing terrorist violence like this, like these ones. I've gone through like a whole list here. And of course, it goes beyond that. On June 30th, opposition activists burned a state-owned warehouse containing more than 40 tons of subsidized food for government food programs in Anzoátegui State. Consequently, 40,000 families were affected by the fire, seeing that the torched government food warehouse serves 399 local supply and production committees, 278 schools, 31 comprehensive diagnostic centers, 3 penitentiaries, a geriatric center, as well as 52 nutrition houses. Now, why would an opposition who claims to have the people's interests at heart attack the people's food? Why would they attack subsidized food for poor people? You know, so that all these communities, all these schools, medical centers, all this stuff would be cut off from food. I mean, this is terrorism. There's no question about it. Terrorism against the population by the armed opposition in Venezuela. This is what they're doing. They're terrorizing people. And then they're claiming that the government is authoritarian, which it's not. It's nonsense. And of course, we need to pay attention to who the Venezuelan opposition are, the people who carry out or encourage these crimes. They're the people who do not want socialism in Venezuela. They don't want the traditionally oppressed people of the country to exercise authority. They are the business owners, the speculators, the monopolists, the landlords, the oil men, the privileged and well-to-do, who, as they have throughout history, are willing to kill and destroy to protect their wealth. The sort of people who see the socialist government in Venezuela, see the people in the socialist government as Cuban agents. They openly said this. They see the government effectively as a group of Cuban agents in the process of destroying their beloved republic, their beloved capitalist republic, by giving working class and oppressed people a fair shake. That's what the people who run the opposition are really afraid of. They're afraid of working class people. They're afraid of the oppressed people. They're afraid that they, as the capitalist class, will lose their wealth and their power and their control, which used to be virtually exclusive back in the 1990s. What they want to do is destroy the Bolivarian Revolution, basically. Reverse all its gains. Reverse all the progressive gains that have been won in Venezuela over the past almost 2 decades now. One opposition demonstrator interviewed alongside her oil executive husband at Caracas's exclusive Buddha Club, which is an exclusive club surrounded by high walls and offers such delicacies as tuna steaks, fish tacos, salmon tartare, and almond parfait, said, quote, "By day we throw stones and by night we come here. After the protests, it is good to have a moment to relax, though we'll never relax until this government is gone." I mean, that's the U.S.-backed opposition for you. And of course, they have the resources to call up thugs, assassins, and various well-intentioned dupes to support their luxury and greed. Their interests as capitalists are at stake, and there are no depths they will not sink to as they struggle to defend them. They are the ones who tremble in fear when proletarians like Jesus Diaz, spokesman of the Pío Tameo commune in Lara, say, quote, "If they continue with their guarimbas, violent protests, we will take over their factories." This is class war in Venezuela, make no mistake about it. And the capitalist class, the exploiters, are being very, very brutal indeed in the protection of their wealth, as they are everywhere in the world where their wealth and exclusive power and control as a class is threatened. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Nine Inch Nails with Head Like a Hole. I think it pretty well describes the pathology of wealth, which pretty much governs the Venezuelan opposition, right-wing opposition, which of course is tearing the country apart right now. And of course, you're listening to Back in the USSR on 93.3 FM CFRU. Now, of course, we're talking about Venezuela and the current crisis there. If the opposition comes to power, it will almost certainly mean that all Chavistas, you know, supporters of the Bolivarian Revolution, whether they currently support President Maduro or not, will become targets for persecution. Although it was a long time ago, many Chavistas have not forgotten the Caracazo, when in February 1989, then-President Carlos Andreas Paredes meted out a retaliation on poor neighborhoods for protesting against his government and wantonly killed somewhere between 400 and 1,000 people. More recently, during a short-lived coup against President Hugo Chavez in April 2002, the current opposition showed that it was more than willing to unleash reprisals against Chavistas. Most do not know this, but during the two-day coup, over 60 Chavistas were killed in Venezuela, not including the 19 killed on both sides of the political divide in the lead-up to the coup. The post-election violence of April 2013 left 7 dead, and the Garimbas of February to April 2014 left 43 dead. Although the death count in each of these cases represented a mix of opposition supporters, Chavistas, and non-involved bystanders, the majority belonged to the Chavista side of the political divide. So Venezuela has a history of right-wing terrorism against supporters of the Bolivarian Revolution. And another thing that plays a major role here is race and racism. And I would actually like to, because of course the right-wing Venezuelan opposition is profoundly racist. Profoundly racist. And I'd like to read an article, it's an interview with a Afro-Venezuelan activist, Maria Emilia Duran, concerning the blatant racism and sexism of the Venezuelan opposition, which forms a major factor in who they target for destruction in their war against the socialist government. So, this is from April 11, 2017, when the current crisis was really just beginning. And it goes like this. April 11, 2002. Venezuela changed forever following the events of this day. For the country's right-wing opposition, it was a day of celebration, given that they temporarily removed President Hugo Chavez in a U.S.-backed coup. For the country's poor and oppressed, it was a day of struggle in defense of their Bolivarian Revolution and all its hard-earned social gains. Today, as right-wing demonstrators continue to attack the revolution 15 years later, Afro-Venezuelan activist and feminist Maria Emilia Duran reflects on the class nature of the opposition and its protests. It's a white, bourgeois, classist, racist, and sexist elite that has no patriotism, Duran told Telesur during an interview. They want a Venezuela where only they exist, not black, indigenous, and poor people. For over 2 weeks, violent anti-government demonstrators have repeatedly been held in Caracas. For Duran, those protesting today against Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro represent the same social class as those who helped plan and execute the violent 2002 coup. Over 15 years ago, as Chavez began restructuring the country's state-owned Petroleum of Venezuela company, as well as putting into law a land reform, wealthy elites connected to private multinational energy companies and rich landowners began calling for his ouster. Chavez, committed to lifting millions out of poverty, sought to bring the PDVSA under more government control and redistribute its profits for the country's poor. The recently elected leader's plans to fully nationalize the PDVSA presented a threat to ruling elites who previously raked in millions by selling the country's oil to multinational corporations like ExxonMobil and Standard Oil. Tensions reached a boiling point on April 7, 2002, when Chavez fired pro-market PDVSA president Guaycaipuro Lameda Montero and replaced him with a former leader of Venezuela's Communist Party who favored nationalization. That's when Venezuela's right-wing opposition, connected to multinational oil companies, called for national strikes protesting the Bolivarian Revolution. Opposition leaders, claiming that Chavez was a dictator who wanted to make Venezuela into another Cuba, ordered sectors of the country's armed forces to arrest him and installed wealthy oil businessman Pedro Carmona as president. "I didn't know what was going on. I was a young girl in another country," said Duran, who was enrolled in the student exchange program in Washington, D.C., when the failed coup took place. "It was the first time I heard my father crying when they said that they kidnapped him. You know, they kidnapped Chavez. It was a very difficult time." Carmona, a right-wing politician backed by the U.S., sought to undo all of the actions taken by the revolution. but the Afro-descendant, indigenous, and working class masses who supported the revolution immediately responded to Chavez's ouster, holding large protests outside the Miraflores presidential palace in Caracas, calling for his return. I had two teachers who were former members of the Black Panther Party and supported Chavez, who told me he's going to come back, Duran said. That night, my family called me and said Chavez returned to Miraflores. I turned on Univision, and they, a bourgeois media outlet, were forced to admit he'd returned. Sectors of Venezuela's armed forces loyal to Chavez teamed up with a grassroots community collectives known as Bolivarian Circles to retake Miraflores, allowing Chavez to be reinstalled on April 13, 2002. Duran said the attempted coup forever changed the country, raising the level of consciousness in Venezuela to a very high level. She also said that the political event strengthened the Bolivarian Revolution, preparing it for forthcoming attacks by the country's U.S.-backed right-wing opposition. The capitalist threats are still present. They're still present. The capitalist threats are still present. And we see them in these protests that are allegedly for freedom and democracy, Duran said. Today we see the same thing we saw back then. Multinational elites attacking a small country like Venezuela using media campaigns that try to delegitimize our participatory and democratic movement. Duran was active in feminist and Afro-Venezuelan cultural organizations in Venezuela that supported Chavez's administration and continue to support the Bolivarian Revolution today. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
The devil's devil has a couple fools. My culture screwed, cause this word is misconstrued. Small countries exempt from food, cause leaders have different views. You choose.
What mean the world to me is being free. Live and let live and just let it be.
Let it be.
Love, peace, and harmony. One universal family. One God, one aim, and one destiny.
Oh yeah. Imagine life without a choice at all. Giving a vote without a voice at all. These be the problems that we face. I'm talking poverty and race, but no matter what the case, we gotta
hold on to this feeling. Freedom. That hold on to this feeling. Freedom.
Yo, I'm the first candidate to hate. Had to beat on the drum to communicate. Was to come to those who were hung. They would decapitate the tongue if you would mention the word freedom.
Got people screaming free will me and Jamal, but two out of three of y'all will probably be at the mall. I'm heated with y'all, the defeated will fall, incomplete and unsolved when the word freedom's involved.
Yo, my forefathers hung in trees to be free.
Rest in peace.
Got rid of slavery but still kept the penitentiary, and now freedom got a shotgun and shells with your name. Release the hot ones and let freedom
ring. I'm a former
rain.
Boat prisoner, Hollywood visitor, dance for cats, segregated on wax. My color got me handy, Cap, Anus, and Andy, for the freedom they just won't hand me.